Good day, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Law of Attraction, New Manifestation. For this episode, you know what day it is. It's Tuesday. That means it's time for Tuesday Taoism. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. Hey there, listener. I hope the content on this podcast helps you in your spiritual practice and that it provides inspiration and motivation for you today. You know, I make next to nothing on this podcast, financially speaking, although there are other rewards that I receive and find extremely valuable. If you're able and willing, consider offering a small monetary donation every month. You can do as little as $1 per month or as much as $10 per month. This would be much appreciated and very supportive. I really do appreciate you taking the time to listen. If you are interested in becoming a supporter, just look for a link in the description of the podcast. You'll find it there. Click that link and sign up to become a supporter today. Thanks again. All right, everyone, let's get into Tuesday Taoism. By the way, in case you're tuning in now and realizing that this is coming up a little late today, you are correct. Got a busy day at work today and I couldn't get it done during my lunch hour, so apologize for that. But for those of you maybe here for the first time and are wondering what Tuesday Taoism has to do with Law of Attraction, also Zen Stream on Sundays, you know, I like using the metaphor of the seeds of desire and the soil in which we plant the seed. So when you come to Law of Attraction, many of us come because of specific desires that we have. And these desires, I like to call like seeds, you know, that you plant in the ground and you hope grow into, you know, big, strong, powerful, you know, trees of manifestation. And we water these seeds with our Law of Attraction techniques, right? Visualize, affirm, maybe 5x55, scripting, acting as if, whatever you use, you're basically watering this desire, this little seed. And again, all the Law of Attraction techniques are specifically for that purpose. But my question to you is, what about the soil? What is your overall vibration, the environmental vibration that you have within yourself, within your heart, within your soul, within your mind? Because if your soil is not being tended to and you're planting these wonderful seeds of desire, they may have trouble taking root. And for me, the way I have learned to tend my soil, my overall vibration, has been through Zen Buddhism and the Taoism, the Tao Te Ching book, which I've been reading from for Tuesday Taoism. So that is how these two are connected. And I find that the material that comes out of the Tao Te Ching, as well as a lot of the Zen material, just does wonders for untying knots of resistance, untying knots of thinking, getting off that mouse wheel in your mind, getting more mindful, getting more grounded, getting more grateful, and becoming more conscious and aware of your connection to source. So that's why I bring Tuesday Taoism to this Law of Attraction podcast, as well as the Zen Stream on Sundays. Now, all that being said, I have been reading from the Tao Te Ching, the foundation of Taoism, now for, we're up to chapter 32. So it's been 32 weeks. I'm going to read this for you. This book was written 2,500 to 3,000 years ago. It's been translated hundreds of times, if not thousands of times. And interestingly, today, for today's chapter, that's going to present an interesting twist. And you'll see as I get into this, what I'm talking about. But what I'm trying to say is that since it's been translated so many times and by so many different people, the meaning sometimes gets changed. And this particular translation I'm reading from has always been one of my favorites. It's translated by a gentleman named Stephen Mitchell. In case you want to pick up a copy, that's the one that I am reading from. If you are interested in learning a little bit more about how this series came to be, a little bit more about Taoism, how it came together with Buddhism at the time, and became, basically, in a nutshell, Buddhism came from India into China, and in China, At that time, the two major kind of philosophy schools of thought was Confucianism and Taoism. And it is said that Buddhism came together with Taoism then and became Zen. And that is the what gave birth to the Zen tradition of Buddhism. So, like I said, very interesting stuff, stuff I find fascinating. And this book is simply incredible for those of you who've been listening along. I hope you have been enjoying it. So I'm going to go ahead and read chapter 32 and going to discuss it a little bit. And like I said, going to be a little bit of a twist today with the translation. So let's go ahead and get into this, okay? Chapter 32, Tao Te Ching, translated by Stephen Mitchell. The Tao can't be perceived. I don't like the way that was coming out. Let me try it again. The Tao can't be perceived. Smaller than an electron, it contains uncountable galaxies. If powerful men and women could remain centered in the Tao, all things would be in harmony. The world would become a paradise. All people would be at peace, and the law would be written in their hearts. When you have names and forms, know that they are provisional. When you have institutions, know where their functions should end. Knowing when to stop, you can avoid any danger. All things end in the Tao as rivers flow into the sea. And that's the end of the chapter right there. Very poetic chapter. Love the sound of it. Love the way the author put it together. Now, this may be a little bit of a longer Tuesday Taoism episode because I need to get into some stuff here. And I don't want to nitpick too much about the meaning of words and the translation. I do want to eventually get to the overall message of this chapter as I interpret it. Because there's some great stuff to talk about in regard to that. But before I do that, I want to point something out that jumped out at me, and I decided to do a little digging, and I've got some interesting things that I wanted to share with you. So the thing that jumped out at me that was odd is the second sentence here. It says, smaller than an electron, it contains uncountable galaxies. Now, this raised a question in my mind because I'm here thinking, okay, how did a guy who's supposedly a hermit in ancient China know about electrons? And then I started wondering, did they have a word back then for electrons? You know, that word just kind of like seemed out of place. So I decided to search some other translations, and oh my goodness, you would not believe the variability in different translations. So I'm going to read a different translation just so you can see the difference. This one's translated by someone named, I'm going to totally butcher this name. It's Lin Yutang. I guess it's a Chinese person. Sounds Chinese anyway. It was written in 1948, this translation. So I'm just going to read it to you a little quickly because I don't want to make this too long, but you'll see the difference. So the way this person translated it, it goes like this. Tao is absolute and has no name. Tao is absolute and has no name. Though the uncarved wood is small, it cannot be employed or used as a vessel by anyone. If kings and barons can keep this unspoiled nature, the whole world shall yield them lordship of their own accord. The heaven and earth join, and the sweet rain falls beyond the command of men, yet evenly upon all. Then human civilization arose, and there were names. Since there were names, it were well one knew where to stop. He who knows where to stop may be exempt from danger. Tao in the world may be compared to rivers that run into the sea. That's the end of that translation. Now, that is quite different. It's quite different. There's no talk about electrons, uncountable galaxies. Now, what it does have in common is the first translation does say the Tao can't be perceived. And the older translation says Tao is absolute and has no name. Different, but okay. I could kind of see how that's a little related. And the other thing it says is where they have in common is that the first one says that I read says if powerful men and women could remain centered in the Tao, all things would be in harmony. And the older one says if kings and barons can keep this unspoiled nature, the whole world shall yield them lordship of their own accord. Okay, that's similar. Then it goes on to the first one that I read goes on to say world would become a paradise, all people would be at peace, Allah would be written in their hearts. That part, it's a little different. The older one says, and the sweet rains fall beyond the command of men, yet evenly upon all. And then the first one I read says, when you have names and forms, know that they are provisional. When you have institutions, know where their functions should end. Knowing when to stop, you can avoid any danger. And the older one says, then human civilization arose and there were names. Since there were names, it were well one knew where to stop. He who knows where to stop may be exempt from danger. And the two last lines are actually pretty similar. All things end in the Tao as rivers flow into the sea. That's the first one I read. And the second one is, doubt in the world may be compared to rivers that run into the sea. So I don't want to bore you here with like the semantics, like I said, but you can see what I say every week of how the translations are so different. And I didn't want to like go too crazy here, but I did read a couple other translations of this chapter that were even like more different. So it's very fascinating how, you know, this is such a great example of how we all filter information, right? Because the original text, I'm sure it's exactly the same text, but we come to it with our own filters, our own ways of reading, of perceiving, of interpreting, of translating, and you get two very different effects. Now, to kind of talk just a little bit more about what I perceive as the deeper meaning to this chapter, which I think is just amazing, is very similar actually to the very first chapter, because he starts out by saying the Tao cannot be perceived. Okay, and I've said here on this podcast so many times that source, okay, which is a very rough translation of Tao, okay, very, very rough translation. You cannot grasp it with your five senses, right? You can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't touch it, you can't feel it with your hands. It's something that is beyond mind. And our small, rational, logical, linear, problem-solving mind, that's what it does. It tries to grasp concepts. It tries to understand. And why does it do that? Well, because that's in interest of our survival. The more we understand our environment, the more we're able to control our environment, the more we're able to see relationships between cause and effect and predict what will happen next, the more likely we are to survive, right? So it's a very much survival-driven instinct that we have in us to understand, to conquer, to make, draw relationships between causes and effects. All this stuff is very like thinking, rational, logical, linear, okay? And that's the part of the mind that is very, takes sensory information and uses it, compares, analyzes, labels, that's a big word too. It labels things that it comes into contact with, and it creates files for these things in order to understand more in the future in case it runs across this type of thing again. That's basically the function of what it does. But source is something that part of our mind cannot grasp. It cannot understand it. You can't explain it. You can't describe it. You can't give someone enough words so that they get to a point that they're able to actually feel it within themselves. That is proof that it comes from beyond the mind. This is something that you can sense when you are very moved, when you have a very strong feeling come over you, when you are in love, when you look into the face of your child, when you when you see a sunset or a sunrise, when you look up at the stars, when you have a really great long meditation retreat and you just feel so connected, and your mind, the smaller mind that I was describing a little bit ago, it actually slows down. It doesn't stop, okay? It doesn't mean that it has to stop thinking. A lot of people have that misinterpretation that, oh, if I'm really in deep meditation, then there are no thoughts. That's not exactly true. If your thoughts completely stop, you're brain dead, okay? That's not a good sign. But what is true is that the thoughts begin to have much less power over your emotional state. They don't drag you around. They don't control your feeling state as much. They're there, they pop up, but they go away. You don't pay them that much attention. And you have more conscious control over which thoughts you infuse with emotional power, okay? And that is, you know, obviously fundamentally important. Now, I'm going to pause here for a quick word from a sponsor, but I'll be right back because I have to talk about the second half of this chapter. Some very, very important stuff here. Just sit tight for 1 minute. All right, I'm back. Thanks for your patience. Okay, like I was saying, some very important stuff coming up here in the second half, especially of this particular chapter. So what I want to point out is the line where he says, when you have names and forms, know that they are provisional. When you have institutions, know where their functions should end. Knowing when to stop, you can avoid any danger. Now, here's what I love about this, and this so much applies to our law of attraction practice, that we have to, at some point, come to an understanding that our smaller, linear, rational, problem-solving, thinking mind, it has a limit to where it can go. And what happens is that when you are trying to address, let's say, vibration, when you are trying to be that which you want to attract, it doesn't happen in that part of the mind. That part of the mind only maps, plans, draws out, figures out, problem solves, and it tries to come up with, what it'll say is, okay, what do I have to do to make this come, right? It's very like action-oriented mind. I desire this. And usually it also gets much more fixated on the objects and the specific outcomes that we want to manifest using law of attraction techniques. Whereas the high self, the source, it's not as interested in specific objects, right? What it's really looking for is the emotional experience of having that object. And that is something I've said many, many, many times here on the podcast. So just a quick example, if you want a relationship, it's not the person, the body that you want, right? It's the feeling of being loved, the feeling of having union, the feeling of being intimate with someone, the feeling of romance. That is what is within that form, but the smaller, rational, more logical mind, the thinking mind, let's call it, gets much more fixated on the person, the object. Oh, I need to have this person, or it has to be, you know, this way, or it has to be. And granted, there's a little bit of overlap. You can't make a hard and fast line like this is thinking mind, this is source, right? They kind of have an ebb and flow, and there's an overlap there, right? But my point is, and he says it so well in this chapter, when he says, when you have names and forms, that's the stuff of the logical thinking mind. He says it, no, they are provisional. When you have institutions, know where their functions should end. And this applies to a lot of different things, right? I mean, you could see this in our legal institutions, in you know, he could be talking about very broad things like that. But he could also be talking about our approach to ourselves becoming, is that at some point you have to enter that place that is beyond thinking and just become what it is that you want to attract. You don't think your way there. You don't problem solve your way there. You don't plan your way there. It's something that changes on a deeper level. Now, that's not to say that the thinking mind is not involved at all. You know, you still use the thinking mind, to maybe try different techniques, learn about techniques, try them out. But when you're trying them, the communication about how good that technique is does not come from that logical thinking mind. It comes from your emotions, from how you feel as you use that technique. And that is something that comes from beyond this naming, forming mind, this more logical, linear, rational mind. This is something that, you know, Eckhart Tolle talks quite a bit about in his book, The Power of Now. He calls it the thinker, the thinking mind. And plenty of other people have also talked about it, plenty of other people. And to connect to that part of ourselves that is beyond this mind, it's a lot about, again, what many, many, many teachers have talked about for thousands of years. Meditation, mindfulness is another great practice. So you really have to, at some point, realize that the thing that we seek, that connection to source, that feeling of awakenedness, that feeling of becoming that which we want, it is something that anybody could point to it and call it a different name. They could call it God, they could call it source, they could call it, right? The names change, but the feeling, that thing that we seek, it never changes. It's always been the same thing. It's just that we dress it up in different concepts, different labels, different ideas, different forms. And paradoxically and kind of sadly, the more labels we put on it and the more ways we try to get it and the more ways we try to attack it, so to speak, with the smaller mind, the further and further we push it away. And that's just the way that it tends to go. So he says very clearly in this chapter, it's about knowing when to stop. that is one of the most important things to learn. And that if you can do that, you actually avoid any danger. He says that very, very clearly. So it's just very subtle thing, but I love the way that he's able to describe it in few words. And I just find that is, you know, just so important in my own practice, because there's so many times where you have tried, or I have tried to learn something, repeat certain steps, look, you know, try to approach this thing logically, rationally, and it's just, it just doesn't come. I want to read to you here, something that I wrote. I mentioned this in another podcast episode a couple weeks ago. I'm actually working right now on a book of short meditations, and it's gonna take a long time to get it done. So just don't expect that anytime soon. But one of these that I read, it actually addresses this exact thing that I've been talking about. I'm gonna read it to you real quick, and then I'll end after that. So it says here, all answers can be found within, but they do not come from our day-to-day mind. We cannot think our way there. When the mind slows enough, you will know that place into which thoughts and words can't reach. It's a vast, open space. It is simultaneously within and without. It is beyond the senses. You cannot point to it. You cannot show it to someone else. Ironically, it's the most obvious thing to find. It is in our searching that we actually push it away. So, I like that. I hope that you got some benefit out of this. Again, I know the beginning was a little bit getting into specifics and details that maybe are not so relevant, but I thought it was important to put that out there, because I want to bring you guys stuff that is, you know, clear and is not in any way tainted or off center, if that makes sense. Anyway, guys, again, I hope you benefited from this. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day. Little programming note, this weekend I will be on a cruise. Zen stream on Sundays might be affected. I'm not sure if I'll be somewhere where I can record it and upload it. But if I'm not able to do it on Sunday, I'll definitely have it out by Monday. So it'll be weird, Zen stream on Sunday on Monday, but we'll figure it out. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you guys in the very near future.